I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, February 15th, 2016. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:30 p.m. We're here in Juneau. Present today, committee members, Vice Chair Senator Costello, Senator Stoltz, Senator Coghill, and Senator Wilikowski. I believe that Senator Machicki will be joining us shortly, as well as Senator Stedman. Thanks to Ann, our recording secretary, and to Cody, who's helping us out with audio. Today, the committee will take up one of the governor's appointments to the Board of Game, and then we'll go on to Senate Bill 163. So the first item is the appointment of Mr. Guy Trimingham to the Board of Game. Mr. Trimingham is on the phone. So welcome, Mr. Trimingham. If you would identify yourself for the record and tell us why you seek this position, what qualifies you for it. Welcome.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Guy Trimingham. I live in Hope, Alaska. Right now I'm in beautiful Prudhoe Bay, where we've been under a weather advisory for the last 4 days. I believe that I'm very well suited for this board appointment because of my background, lifelong background, both in the guiding here in Alaska and in subsistence type lifestyle. And also I live in a heavily favored community for tourist industry where the non-consumptive input is quite important to our income. So I think that I have a good balance between both consumptive and non-consumptive, and that I can represent both sides without being a party to either one.
Very good. I may have missed it, Mr. Trimingham. How long have you lived in Alaska?
I was born and raised here. I'm 62 years old.
Very good. Thank you. A lifer, like several of us here on this committee.
A lifer,
yes. Thank you. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Trimingham?
He looks like he is.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Yeah, my only question is just on the document that we got. There was a part that said it asked if you would be willing to provide full disclosure of personal financial data, and you marked no. And I don't know if that was a mistake. I think that's required by law.
That was a mistake. No, I have no reason not to file all my financial data, and that's pretty open access.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Stoltz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Trimingham, what are your thoughts on intensive game management for abundance?
Other than it's the law, without intensive management strategy, primarily for two major predator species, wolves and black bear, we cannot hope to develop any type of a consumptive population for moose, sheep, goats, caribou. On the other hand, intensive management is going to have to address both habitat user groups that are going to be harvesting that game. It's a many-faceted problem, Title 16, and there's no easy answers, but it is necessary, and I think done in the right way, we can and we have proven that it can be very, very productive for producing more ungulates for consumptive and non-consumptive users.
Follow-up, Senator Stoltz.
And thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Trimingham, on what would maybe give us a couple examples on how a decision would manifest in providing a greater opportunity for consumptive use? What give us an example of what you believe could create a better balance for non-consumptive use?
Let's just use wolves as an example. They're quite efficient, and there's been many cases on the Alaska Peninsula where caribou herds have been devastated down to almost three-digit numbers. And with a little bit of wolf management, the herds have been coming back rapidly. Calf survival rate is tremendously up, and local communities have been able to utilize the local caribou for livelihood and subsistence purposes. It was very effective. It's also been effective with black bear populations to increase moose numbers around certain villages. It's a tremendous tool. I think it's quite in our favor to utilize it to the greatest extent we can.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And that was a very good example of providing for a consumptive use. How would you maybe make a different decision or a different philosophical change to provide for non-consumptive use, since you raised the issue?
Well, non-consumptive use provides a tremendous amount of money into our economy in the state of Alaska. Tourism is tremendous. It's one of our greatest assets, really. Because of where we live. Part of that is being able to view doll sheep, goats, moose, black bear, brown bear, and in certain locations, even wolves, although wolves are so secretive, it's a rare thing when you do see one. But that is a major part of our income for the state of Alaska, and it's renewable. I just think that this would be not in our best practices to utilize that and increase numbers so that all could, all of our tourists and our locals could enjoy them.
Well, follow-ups?
Thank you,
thoughts?
Madam Chair. I'll try again. As a member of the Board of Game, what other decisions would you make that haven't been made? How would you manifest that philosophy to change decision-making to provide for different consumptive use decisions, non-consumptive use decisions, since we're asking about your activities as a board member? I appreciate the description of the activities, but we're asking about your role as a member of the Board of Game.
Of course, no one individual is going to control the board. It's a group of seven members. So using what current science that's available, working with the individual on the board, we'd have to work towards a common agreement where we could agree that non-consumptive uses are always as much important as consumptive uses. I don't see where any particular item that I could bring to the board myself would sway the board unequivocally in my favor at all times. But I think that using science, which is one of my strong points of growing up where I did and with the parents that I had, I think it's viable that I can make a very good argument for non-consumptive use across the board.
So. Thank you. I want to take a moment to recognize that Senator Michiki joined us several months ago, and welcome to Senator Stedman.
I'll come back later if there's time.
Okay, that's great. Other persons with questions? Senator Costello.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Trimington, can you explain to the committee your understanding of managing Alaska's resources for maximum sustainable yield? And do you think that the board and the department has done a good job?
I think that giving the resources that the board has had, that they've done a tremendous job. And my understanding of the resources available, which the Board of Game can influence, are primarily fish and game. Habitat is a part of that intensive management plan. But the resources that are at hand, financial constraints are always an issue to gain the science that we need to make good decisions. With the right resources at our disposal, I think the board and I can make reasonable and intelligent decisions for the user groups in the state of Alaska.
Follow-up, Senator Costello.
Thank you. And can you describe what you see as the biggest challenges facing the board?
Well, it's always going to be a subsistence issue. There's tremendous amount of pressure on relatively limited amount of resources. there's any number of documents that can be brought to bear showing the quality of hunts that have been out there, but a number of games available for subsistence and normal, just, you know, hunters, non-subsistence issues. We have very limited resource. Our environment is not conducive to tremendous pressure. Our plants do not grow like they do in some other places in the United States where you can have multiple species of game on one terrain. Everything here eats its own little separate part of the habitat. So it's many facets, but we, as the board members, I think can make very good decision on consumptive, non-consumptive uses with the science we have.
Follow-up, Senator Costello?
Yeah, my final question is just if he could explain, you know, why you are interested in serving on the board.
Well, you know, I spent my entire life living in small town, Hope. My backyard has always been the outdoors. I hunt, I fish. I've always also been a guide, guided for over 20 years. I currently work in the oil industry. I have a very broad and diverse range of information and knowledge, and I think that not being partisan to any one group, I can represent everybody adequately. And it's my time. It's my point in life where I think I can do that.
Thank you. Senator Coghill had a question.
Thank you for taking the time in your life to be available for this. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it also. Thank you, sir.
Up in our neck of the woods, we struggle with some things, so I'll bring two questions to bear. One of them, have you ever worked in or worked with an advisory committee that that went to the Board of Game for anything?
No, I have not. I sat on the Subsistence Fisheries Board during several sessions in Soltotna multiple years ago. But I have not sat on any board that advisory board that submitted issues to the Board of Game. No.
Well, if you get appointed to this board, you will have some experience there. And one of the issues up in my neck of the woods, up in the Fairbanks interior area, is antlerless moose hunts. And the tension between the biological issue, the game board, and the advisory committees. And have you got any reservations, philosophical views on antlerless moose hunts?
No philosophical views at all. As far as the advisory boards, I think it would be absolutely foolish to take thousands of years of experience scattered across this state, hundreds of years at least, of experience and toss it out the window when that is so valuable to us for making wise decisions. Science will take you so far, but you're still going to need to have eyes on the ground.
And I appreciate that, because in our neck of the woods, we struggle on trying to get that right. And one of the areas, Madam Chair and Mr. Turningham, is that it seems like moose hunts and access become kind of the big issue there, and the advisory committees probably have some of the best access to information. But it's also true that you'll have a couple of advisory committees that have very, very different views about it right next to each other. So it's something that if you get appointed, that you're going to have to live with. But it is true. The boots on the ground are the people who see the issue there, I think, is very important. I'm glad you'd be willing to pay attention to them. So no questions at this point.
Madam. Thank you, Senator Coghill.
Thank you, sir.
Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Trimingham, hello, and thanks for going through the confirmation process. Board of Games arguably play the second most contentious, potentially contentious board, and I appreciate you being here. So my questions kind of go along, or my question kind of goes along with the maximum sustainable yield question with Senator Costello and Senator Stoltz's active management question. You talked about the results of active management. In your what I've seen about you, you believe in balancing certain non-consumptive uses with more traditional ones. When it comes to active management, certain non-consumptive users sometimes don't believe in any active management. So my question specifically is, do you agree that in certain cases, active management in the form of predator control is sometimes necessary?
Absolutely. Predator control, but let me back up. First of all, we're in a kind of a unique time here in Alaska with climate change, the environment in South Central. We're not getting cold, dry winters anymore, and it's affecting many of our game populations. We're also having introductions of different diseases we're worried about that we never were before. Habitat is changing. We must use active, intensive management of predators to maintain some level of use for people of Alaska or people of the United States who come up and visit. And I think that the habitat carrying capacity is one of the primary limiting factors on that. Once we handle the predators, the habitat's the next thing that needs to be addressed.
Follow-up, Senator Michiki?
No, thank you very much.
All right. I have a question for you, Mr. Trimmingham. What is your thoughts, what is your position on the buffer zones that exist around federal land units and the occasional suggestion that those buffer zones be actually expanded?
You know, that's a tough one. Those people that live along the buffer zones, some really like the fact that they live on in an area where there is no hunting next door. There's others that actually utilize it, hunting and trapping, and I think it's wonderful. I don't know where the limit is for those buffer zones. We've got buffer zones outside McKinley, or Denali, sorry, Katmai. I don't know exactly know where the buffer zones need to quit. I guess that's going to be a science-based question that would be more in tune to what type of connecting habitat we need for game species to move from one area to another.
Okay, thank you. Second question, what is your opinion on the Park Service's adopted changes and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife regulations? Do you feel that those are overreach by the federal government?
Well, that's a tough question because the last time I checked, we're still all playing on the same ball field. We may have different names, but we're still part of the same government. I think it's a place for us to have an open discussion. There's been and has been for a long time contentions between the different groups, Fish and Wildlife, Forest Service, State, BLM. I'm not going to be able to solve that problem, neither is the game board, but I think that's just a platform for us to have open discussion and honesty and see if we can reach some consensus.
Okay, thank you. Further questions from committee members? Senator Stoltz.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Mr. Trimmingham, I have a follow-up question. In answering one of your previous questions, you said you didn't expect to be able to swing the rest of the board in your favor. And I wonder if you can elaborate on that and maybe what positions or agendas that you think that you're going to be in the minority on that the majority of the board is going to disagree with you, and what positions were you maybe alluding to when you talked about not being able to swing the rest of the board in your favor? Just some elaboration on that would be helpful.
Well, being the newest guy in town, it's going to take a while to build a credibility with the board, other board members, and a relationship with them where they trust my judgment, I trust theirs. Coming from where I come from, it's nice to be able to say everybody's coming to you with open and honest intentions, but that's really not what life is about. It'll take time. I will build credibility. I'll be able in time to learn my way around this board. and be able to make wiser decisions and decisions that can actually influence the board as time goes on. But I think that's just it. I'm the new guy in town. So there's certain I'm going to have certain limits of what I can and do.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I know most of those board members, and they're pretty genial folks. I think they'll probably accept you as a fellow human pretty easily. I think you alluded to positions that you don't have their favor, and I just knowing those members, I don't think it's going to be a congeniality issue. But usually differences arise not from background, but from positions that you take, and that just like we do in this body. So I really would like to. You brought up the issue about you wouldn't be able to immediately swing folks into your favor, and I took that as a position on something. And I just, if there's an agenda, which I didn't bring up, but the board member did, I just would like to just get on the record what he hopes to accomplish with maybe new like-minded members over the years, and I think that's what I'm looking for, and I think that's what my constituents mm-hmm. want me to ask.
Well, looking through the current proposals, I see a lot of ones that I have a passion about. Sheep hunting is one of them. Of course, that was one of my favorite things to do when I was a guide. And so I think those are issues where I'm going to bring a tremendous amount of knowledge to this board. And if anything, that might be the place I could have the most influence, is where that is my largest knowledge base. I have strong feelings about guiding. I think if I was younger, I would be doing it again. But I think that there's got to be limitations with our resources. The sheep populations are dropping, so we need to address all angles and avenues of trying to preserve that. And that is one area that I'm pretty well versed in. I spent a lot of time in those mountains with sheep, and I think that's one area I could probably have a little bit of bearing on the board.
I'll just ask a broad. Have you followed first, Madam Chair? Have you followed the board activities and the memberships? Are you familiar with some of the past members and current members?
Oh, certainly. Yeah, going back quite a few years, Somerville, of course, Ted Spraker. He's from down in my neck of the woods. Yes, I've followed some of the members over time, and I haven't followed them religiously from year to year, but. I've had followed them. I know what's the backgrounds they come from, and I find it quite a good mix across the board.
Oh, I guess, Madam Chair, I'll just ask maybe fair, maybe not fair, but if you were to look at past board members, are you closer to a Doug Pope or a Ted Spraker?
Oh boy, you put me in a tough spot there. I hope they're not listening.
I hope they are, actually, because it's an important question.
I would say I'm probably closer to a Ted Spraker than a Doug Pope. I'm very scientifically minded, but then on the other hand, I really love living at the base of my mountain and watching my goats every day when I go out and look up at the mountain. So I think there's a little bit of me in both, but I'm a scientist at heart.
And Madam Chair, I just offer that. I went to grade school and high school with Ted Spraker's wife, and Doug Pope is a multi-generational family friend. So I wasn't offering that in any kind of a way to disparage it, just to try to find out philosophies.
I'm half joking, because I like them both, and I can joke with them about that.
Well, if you vote like Ted Spraker, for the most part, I think everybody's a lot more comfortable.
Further questions from committee members. Senator Michicki.
So, with the Sturgeon case in mind, Mr. Trimingham, how do you feel about some of the controlled use area tools and how that interaction would take place between federal and state areas, and do you have any belief in limiting access as a control mechanism for off-road vehicles, horses, that sort of access that may eliminate access for certain users?
Well, a controlled use area is just that. You control its use by, for different user groups. It could be tourism, could be hunting. It could be people who are on horseback and take offense to four-wheelers or vice versa. There's bicyclists that really don't like seeing horse poop on the trail. We are a big state. We have a lot of room. And I think that controlled use areas is a very viable solution to give different user groups the experience that they want and desire, and which I think it's their right. And controlled use areas is one of the finest ways I can think of to do it.
Follow-up, Senator Machiki?
No, I'm okay.
All right. Further questions from committee members?
Actually.
Yes, Senator Machiki.
Let's talk about the case that's currently in the Supreme Court. How do you see your role on managing wildlife in areas that are adjacent to federal lands? And we sort of had that question earlier by Senator Giesel, but I think there's more to that. We're in a struggle, and I'm not an anti-Fed guy, but obviously we're in a struggle with certain agreements being essentially disregarded by the federal government and the management of our own fish and game. How do you see the Board of Game managing those issues?
Well, the Board of Game is tasked with managing our state's resources, and all federal lands still fall within our state, although they haven't turned them all, everything that was owed to us. I'm not very familiar with this particular case you're speaking of. I haven't followed it closely. So making a real broad general statement on, I think that buffer areas around, you know, national parks are such a century, and who's controlling the fishing game in those areas, I'm going to leave that one to the court, sir. I'm not going to stand up as the new guy and say, well, I think the federal government is off base here. I'm not going to make a decision on that at this moment.
That's fair. Fair answer. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Further questions? All right. Well, in that case, we'll go to public testimony. I am told that there's no one outside, there's no one here present in the room that has signed up outside the room. Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on this individual? I'm looking online and I see no one signed up online to testify either. All right, see.
If I'm disappointed or not,
Madam Chair.
It's hard to tell, isn't it? If there's no one in the room who wishes to testify and no one online, I'll close public testimony on this candidate. Senator Stoltz, a question.
Yeah, I had a question. And we have the governor's boards and commissions, and maybe we could hear what the governor, if we're talking about balance on the various boards, any his input about what they were seeking for in this appointment and what, I don't know if that's unusual or not, or I mean what their goal was in this particular appointment. We've heard it on Board of Fish and other boards. I don't want to depart from normalcy, but be helpful, because a lot of us don't know a lot about.
Is there someone present from the board, from the boards and commissions? Please come forward. Thank you. Welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record, thanks.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is John Hosey. I'm Director of Boards and Commissions for Governor Walker.
Did you hear Senator Stoltz's question?
Yes, ma'am.
You could answer it for us.
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz. The governor was trying to be responsive to a number of inputs that we've received. We've got quite a few requests or recommendations for consideration of someone who could bring a balanced view to consumptive versus non-consumptive uses. There were a number of specific people who were suggested that perhaps maybe didn't strike the best balance. So that weighed fairly heavily in the decision making, and that's what we searched for in the interview process and in the follow-up of individuals of for this particular candidate. And in the end, the governor felt that he represented a healthy balance between the two, so he wouldn't necessarily fall either way on that, but could be open-minded to both.
Very good. Did you have a follow-up,
Senator
Schultz?
No, I just think having that departure, allowing the member from the Boards of Commission, since he happened to be here, maybe he won't show up again if we know what you were going to ask you, but it certainly was helpful just having the administration's position on the record, and I appreciate that indulgence, Madam Chair.
I suspect he'll show up on other appointees also, since this may be a question in the future as well.
Certainly.
Further questions for Mr. Hosey? All right, seeing none, thank you very much for coming forward.
Yep.
All right, so there was no public testimony, no further questions for Mr. Trimingham. In that case, we will make the appointee committee report in accordance with AS 3905080. The Resources Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. Board of Game, Guy Trimingham, Hope, appointed 7-1-2016, term expires 6-30-2019. This does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individual during any future sessions. I will also add that I would recommend that Boards and Commissions update his application, as Senator Wilikowski identified there was an error on his application. So with that, we'll pass around the committee report for signature. We'll take a brief at ease while that's happening. Record. Thank you, Mr. Trimingham, for joining us, and I hope you get out of Prudhoe soon. I know what it's like to be on Weatherhold. All right, so we're back on the record. We're now going to go forward with Senate Bill 163. This is a bill being proposed by the administration related to water reservations, and we have the Department of Environmental Conservation here. Wonderful. I will have you come forward and identify yourself for the record and take us through this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Michelle Hale, and I am the Director of the Division of Water at the Department of Environmental Conservation. I appreciate your hearing this bill. Senate Bill 163 does two things. First, it makes it clear that only the legislature has the authority, has the power, to designate what is known as an outstanding national resource water in the state of Alaska. The second thing that it does is it describes the process that will be used to collect nominations for those waters and additional information and then forward those for consideration to the legislature. Outstanding national resource waters receive the maximum level of protection under the Federal Clean Water Act. So the Clean Water Act requires that states have two things. One, they have what's known as an anti-degradation policy, and the other is they have anti-degradation implementation methods. The state of Alaska has an anti-degradation policy, and that's been on our books since 1997. We have draft anti-degradation implementation methods, and bear with me as I talk about anti-degradation because that's where Tier 3 waters come from, or NRWs come from. We have draft anti-degradation implementation methods that were developed in 2010. In part, those are required by the implementing regulations of the Clean Water Act, but in part, we also developed those as a result of a lawsuit. We were sued because we did not have implementation methods. We've also gone through a process to develop implementation methods in regulation, and we public noticed draft regulations in 2014. Due to the volume of comments received on those regulations, we went back out for further public meetings in 2015. One element of those regulations is what's known as the requirement for a method to nominate and designate Tier 3 waters, or outstanding national resource waters. So outstanding national resource waters are waters that receive, as I said, the highest level of protection under the Clean Water Act. Once a designation of a Tier 3 or outstanding national resource water is made, no additional pollutants can be added to those waters. So except for limited or temporary degradation. Limited or temporary might be construction stormwater that's generated when you're constructing a lodge on a river that received that designation. The real crux of the issue with outstanding national resource waters is that no permanent additional pollutants can be added to those waters, which means that, for example, if there is a town on a river that becomes an outstanding national resource water and they discharge wastewater into that river, they can continue to discharge wastewater, but if the town grows, they can't increase the discharge. A seafood processor on that river would not be able to start seafood processing if they discharge waste into the river. Similarly, mining operations on the river or on tributaries to the river would not be able to discharge wastewater into that river if it increased the pollutant load at all. So the designation of an outstanding national resource water, in a sense, becomes almost a de facto land use decision. The requirement of the Clean Water Act is not that states designate outstanding national resource waters, but just that they have a process for doing so. And that's what we're here today to talk about, is that process. What we're looking at, what this bill looks at, is just stating very simply that it's the legislature that will make that designation, not the agency. During the regulatory process, when we were working on those draft regulations, in addition to receiving a lot of comments on the regulations, one thing that was revealed is somewhat of an ambiguity in terms of who has the authority to make that designation. So when we look at the Constitution, it appears that it is the legislature that makes land use decisions. When we look at our statutory authority, specifically 4603.080, that gives us the authority to make water quality standards decisions, including water classifications. Because of that potential ambiguity that exists, we believe it's very important to make it very clear that it is the legislature and the legislature alone that will make that designation. In addition, the legislature has the authority to do far more than just Tier 3 designations. The legislature can create special management areas, can create state parks, so you just have much broader authority. If it were DEC that were to make that designation, we would make the Tier 3 designation, and we don't have the ability to do other things. So this would be placing that authority with the legislature. What we do have the ability to do, however, is we have the ability to make sure that water quality is maintained. We do that through our water quality standards, through application of those standards to our permits. When we permit discharges, and those permits do allow discharges to occur, but we are required to make sure that the uses of the waters are maintained when we permit the discharges. We've received outstanding national resource waters for three different waters in the state of Alaska. One is the Chilkat River near Haines. Another is the Kaktuli River west of Lake Iliamna. And the third is the entire Bristol Bay watershed. So we're not acting on those right now because of this ambiguity in authority, but we are required to have a process at some point for designating those, whether they're designated or not. So as I said, federal law requires that states have a process for designating outstanding national resource waters, and I'll just give you a quick idea of how that stands in the Western states.
Could you pause for just one moment, Ms. Hale? Senator Wilkowski, you had a question.
Yeah, thank you. Just on the constitutional provision that you're relying on, and we had a good conversation about it in my office. I think it's Article 8, Section 7, Special Purpose Sites. Is that the one?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, yes, it is that one, and also Section 2 is relevant. And I failed to mention that in the conversation in your office.
Okay. And my office called our legislative attorney after we met, and they started to do some research on it but didn't have enough time to do an analysis of it. But did you have an opinion from your attorneys on whether or not it's our... I thought it was very odd when I saw this bill that, wow, here's the executive branch saying we're ceding power to the legislative branch. That's just something you don't usually see here. But did you have an opinion from your attorneys?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, we don't have a formal opinion. We have a bit of different opinions from different attorneys that have viewed this, but we don't have a formal opinion.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski?
I think this issue hinges on this question. Whose authority is it? Is it the legislature's authority? Is it your authority? Is it some ambiguity in which we need to clarify? So I think it'd probably be a good idea for us to get a final decision on what that is.
We can sure follow up on that, Senator Wilkowski, and I believe the department probably will as well. Other questions at this time? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I was going to ask about, you know, watersheds. I was thinking of the Yukon-Kuskokwim, and then you brought up the Bristol Bay watershed. But if you can have something as broad as the Bristol Bay watershed, I assume you can have the Matanuska watershed, Matanuska-Sitka watershed. You could have the watershed of Southeast Alaska. You could virtually shut down the entire state.
Senator Stedman, through the chair, I think there are broad implications to an actual designation, and I think that a lot of people, that the implications that you talk about do have people concerned. There is also it's not just the water bodies themselves, but also tributaries to those water bodies. So the way that the CFR reads is that waters in a Tier 3 or ONRW, the water quality must be maintained and protected. So if there was an activity on a tributary that then impacted the water that becomes designated so that it's not maintained, then that activity would also not be allowed. So, yes, it has broad implications.
Follow-up, Senator Stedman?
I'm just kind of curious if we take... Fairbanks is an example. We got the Chena River, and I assume they have some fish in it. I think there is some fish in Chena River. We got a hatchery up there. And if that had that particular designation, then that would flow downstream all the way to the ocean.
Senator Stedman, through the chair, it is possible to nominate and designate segments of waters. I don't believe, and I don't know the precise answer, but I don't believe that just because a segment of a river, for example, is nominated, then it would flow downstream. What would be more of concern would be what was upriver if there were activities that would result in the water quality in that segment not being maintained and protected.
Follow-up, Senator Stedman.
Just a brief follow-up. The removal of it, can you go over how this designation would be removed either by the legislature or whoever has final authority, how that works?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, the CFR 131.12 that talks about the necessity of having a process for designating these waters does not describe any process for removing that designation. And The digging that we've done reveals that, as far as we know, no designation has been removed yet. The idea is that this is a permanent designation. Now, I certainly haven't gone through any court cases or aware of any court cases where somebody tried to remove the designation. And if I could, we're not talking about actually doing designations. The requirement is there on the books that we have to have a process for designating. That's not saying that we're going to designate. It's just that we're trying to clarify whose process that is by saying it's the legislature that will make that designation. We're aware of the consequences.
Very good. Senator Machicki, you had a question.
I did. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just read through 4603080, and it talks about the department having the authority to classify waters. Did I misunderstand something about your initial statement about the statute?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, we have always read that segment of our statutory authority as of having the ability to classify waters, which we do under our water quality standards. We do not believe that the intent when that statute was passed was to actually classify in terms of as an outstanding national resource water. We've never really interpreted that because we use this we do classify waters as part of our water quality standards. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Follow up, Senator Machicki.
Well, I didn't, of course, look at the legislative intent, but why did you feel like there was a sort of bar of where you could no longer classify, and it suddenly the responsibility shifted to the legislature?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, DEC, we have just never read that statute to mean that we would be able to designate outstanding national resource waters. We have read that statute to mean that we can set water quality standards, which we do, and we can classify waters, which we do through a regulatory process. And by classify waters, I'm talking about classifying a water for a certain use. For example, this water can be used for drinking and swimming. Not doing this designation of outstanding national resource waters. So that was pointed out to us, and that's where part of the ambiguity lies. In the original draft regulations that we did public notice in 2014, those draft regulations culminated with the legislature actually making the designation. So even at that time, the agency was not proposing to make the designation.
Any follow-up, Senator Machicki?
No, thanks.
All right, we'll be going to Senator Stoltz, followed by Senator Coghill, Wilkowski, and Costello.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a question whether or not the affected industries have been consulted in your developing this legislation and what's been their feedback, and did they have an opinion one way or the other, for or against?
Senator Stoltz, through the chair, yes, we have been actually doing considerable outreach to affected industries as well as to some of the NGOs that have a lot of interest in this subject. And I think that I think it's fair to say that there are some in industry that are very supportive of this, that want to see that the designation is only made by the legislature. There are others that think that perhaps we might want to add more clarification to the bill. I think it's been interesting, too, with the environmental NGOs. While some people are worried about the legislature being the body that makes the designations, others are very pleased to see the transparency and the public process that would be involved.
Follow-up, Senator Stoltz?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I've outreached a little bit trying to understand this issue. When there was a reticence to get involved, they said the administration's made up their mind, and they don't. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out how to process that. And usually, folks that we see, I don't know if anybody signed up later, but that's been just our initial outreach, and it's, we don't really want to, we're a little bit reticent about being involved in this because they haven't really listened to us, and that's, I'm just overly summarizing it for efficiency, and it's a hard one, I imagine, for her to respond to, but I just want to put on the record I've tried to get the normal responses that we get from up or down from industry, and it's, a lot of caution is, I think, I didn't see a red or a green light, but I saw this amber alert.
Senator Stoltz, through the chair, yes, as I said, we have done outreach, and we have had some conversations where there is, I wouldn't say concern, but wondering if we should add more clarifying language to the legislation. So we're working with those members of industry and going back and forth with them right now.
Senator Coghill.
Thank you, and thanks for coming to my office and meeting with me. To be fair, your brief explanation in the office helped me start thinking about, okay, where do we look? And when we do our revisor's bill here, quite often we change the CFRs, and I usually go study them out because I want to know what we're signing up for, blanket. And so I kind of did that, and it's a little scary. And, of course, I'm only reading parts of it, but it looks to me like in dealing with it, you're talking about the state's authority on national parks, wildlife refuges, the water that's protected in those, and how they would nominate those under the CFR. And that got me thinking, and you said it in your beginning testimony, that it really becomes effectively a land use decision, which I think properly should be legislature properly brought into it. But it also made me wonder if DNR under the Mining Lands and Water has any input on this, because whether it's a sturgeon issue or just a water quality issue for mines, the mining land and water issue is a pretty significant issue with them. What's been the discussion at this point with those authorities? Because we set up a DEC for water quality and then uses with DNR. Has there been input with DNR? Have you felt the need to look at those? Because it looks to me like this could be a broad sweeping thing when it comes to setting up what the criteria for the designation would be.
Senator Coghill, through the chair, yes, we have been communicating quite a lot with DNR, and we also want to make sure that we make sure one of the questions that has arisen is, are we considering water rights effectively when we look at this possible designation? So we're in an ongoing communication with DNR about that as we try to make sure that we're getting it right here in the bill. Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, because of the late fiscal note we got in, it reminded me, oh man, we got a lot of work to do here. We should probably get DNR's perspective on it as well, and maybe this is a co-management issue that I don't understand the designation part, the criteria for the designation part, but as we get into it, it sounds like that could be one of the key elements before we even get to the legislature, and that should be something that I think all of our managers need to be a part of. Am I asking the right question?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, one of the things about criteria for whether a water can be designated is the criteria, when you read 131.12, are very, very broad. If we attempt to try to define what those criteria are, it's very hard to satisfy all the possibilities. So one of the things that we've done in the bill is the definition of what an outstanding national resource water, we've deliberately said is a water that the legislature decides is important, unique, or, I can't remember, ecologically significant. So we are saying it is your decision. And let me just give an example. As part of my testimony, I was going to describe which waters have been designated in several of the western states. So Washington, Oregon, and Idaho have designated no outstanding national resource waters, which Alaska clearly hasn't either, since we don't have the process yet. Nevada has no outstanding national resource waters. Montana has, I believe, 22. Montana has all waters in national parks. California has two outstanding national resource waters. One of them is Lake Tahoe, and the second is a lake called Mono Lake. And Mono Lake is a, let's see, I've written this down, It is an alkaline hypersaline lake in a closed basin, meaning it's a lake that doesn't have any outlet. It's got inputs. And so it's a very saline lake. So that lake is an outstanding national resource water. But when you talk about criteria, you can't talk about high levels, you know, high water quality, for example, because it's very saline. And so it doesn't really meet any kind of easy criteria for defining. So that is one reason why we've kept the criteria here quite broad and given the authority to the, or given or stating that it's the authority of the legislature to actually make that decision. Follow-up, Senator Coghill?
The thing I'm concerned about is that you'll come to us and say, you got to do this because federal law requires it. And so, you know, it could be an empty authority. That's the suspicious nature of my character. So I'm going to be a little more suspicious on this, that's all.
May I speak to that?
Yes, you certainly may, Ms. Hill.
Senator Coghill, through the chair, rest assured that we would not come to you and say you have to do this. What we have to do is, it's our responsibility to make sure there's a process there, and then it's up to the legislature to follow that process or not. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we go on, Senator Wilkowski, then Senator Costello, followed by other committee members, I appreciate Senator Coghill drawing attention to the fiscal note we received from the Department of Natural Resources and their fiscal impact. They state could be significant should an outstanding national resource water be nominated. So I just draw members' attention to page 2 of that fiscal note. Senator Wilkowski, you are next.
And that was actually the point that I was going to point out. That plus a couple other points. So on page 2 of that footnote, it does say it could be significant. Then the fourth paragraph says, under the bill, the land or water use application adjudication process could become more complicated. But the one point I want to ask you right now is, in going back to that first paragraph, it says, if it could be significant should an outstanding national water resource be nominated and subsequently designated by the legislature and later signed into law. And if I heard you right, your interpretation is that it's for the legislature to decide, which I assume would mean we do a resolution which would not be signed by the governor? Because if the Constitution says it's up to the legislature, I don't know that we would involve the executive branch at that point. Do you have an opinion on that?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I don't, because I just don't have that level of knowledge of the exact process that the legislature would go through.
I could request.
Yes, please, Senator Wilkowski.
Get something in writing on that. Because if your interpretation is we need to do this because it's the legislature's authority, it seems to me it would be a resolution as opposed to a bill.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, we will follow up on that.
And also,
good question. Yes, follow
also,
up.
Also, if you could, on the issue of how this makes the fiscal impact, if we could flesh that out, and also under the bill, the land water use application process could become more complicated, if we could flesh that out some more through further hearings.
Senator Wilkowski, we will work with DNR on that. And I do think it's important that there are certainly potential fiscal consequences to a designation. And that's a different thing than a nomination. We have 3 nominations now. Thank you.
I appreciate your points, Senator Wilkowski. Deputy Commissioner Fogles is on an airplane, or he would be here, and he will be here at the next hearing, or certainly available. Senator Costello, you are next.
Thank you. My question has to do with the nature of the way the bill was written. So the most public, deliberative, sometimes agonizing, and the public is watching this session and it seems to be drawn out, but the legislative process is the public process. So I'm looking at the bill and I'm wondering, why is there a nomination process that then feeds into that public process, which we are a part of right now? Because I think of it in terms of I have constituents come to me with bill ideas, and there isn't any pre-legislative process. They have me, they call me, and I introduce the bill or perhaps have a committee, or consider that. So I'm curious what the rationale is for that public nomination process, and then also the rationale for the reporting. I mean, I could communicate to my constituents all the different bill ideas that have come to my attention through them, but I think that it adds a layer that will become easily politicized because a group may like this idea, and then because it's a nomination situation, which I don't consider that a process. I consider this body, this process that we're engaged in right now as the only public process that we have. So could you speak to that, what the rationale is for basically everything beyond line 8 in the bill?
Senator Costello, through the chair, the implementing regulations of the Clean Water Act, the CFR, require that citizens are able to nominate a water. So that's where the nomination comes from. So that requirement is that citizens can nominate waters, and then the idea of DEC then forwarding a report to the legislature would just be providing that information to the legislature, and the idea of DEC having a public notice period of those nominations is so that people that are in the area, for example, of a nominated water body have the ability to provide additional information and opinions, for example, to the legislature. So that's the idea behind that report. So the idea is the nominations and then the additional backup information would be provided to you, but we are required to have a method for nominating.
Follow-up, Senator Costello.
So if you think through how this might play out, then it sounds like the nomination itself would begin a process of input from the community, and then the legislature may or may not introduce either a resolution or some bill to make that so.
Senator Costello, through the chair, that's correct.
Just follow-up.
Follow-up?
It sounds like then that you're actually starting the legislative process early, and it would create a bureaucracy in and of itself to manage all of these comments that then may or may not be public, whereas it seems that, I'm just curious, have other states just simply said the legislature has this authority?
Senator Costello, through the chair, the process that we're proposing is actually a very light process in terms of bureaucracy. So it's not that the agencies would be reviewing this material. It's just that we would be collecting the material and forwarding it on to the legislature. There are two other states that have, in Western states, I've really only looked at this from a Western states perspective, two other states have the legislature making the decision. I believe that's Montana and Idaho, but I can check that. And in both of those cases, there is more process before the information comes to the legislature. In a lot of states, there is a board or a commission that actually reviews the material and then makes a recommendation. A lot of states, there's a board or commission that actually makes the designation, or that would make the designation.
Follow-up?
So you're saying that if there was a nomination to have the Bristol Bay Watershed fall under this designation, that the department that is handling the nomination process wouldn't get that much comment from the public?
Senator Costello, through the chair, we may get a lot of comment. So, for example, if we were to public notice that we have received this nomination, we may get a lot of comments, but unlike for example, comments that we receive on draft regulations or on a permit that we issue, we would not be putting together a response to comment. We would just be pulling that together for the legislature and forwarding that information to the legislature with just the idea, I think, is minimal bureaucracy attached to that.
Thank you. Follow-up, Senator Costello? All right. My lineup here waiting for questions is Stoltz, Senator Michiki, and Senator Coghill. Senator Stoltz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and you referenced that Mr. Fogel is on a plane, but I'm just noting on a lot of these major bills, whether they're dealing with oil tax credits, we hear from the tax collection end, but not the development arm. And Mr. Meyer is one of the most respected commissioners. Probably took office almost by acclamation from the legislative branch. And same on this issue, we hear from the regulatory arm, But this is one I'd really like to have our commissioner front and center on, explaining the consequences. We hear from our regulators, and I've never heard thing about I've never really heard something as benign as a light process of bureaucracy. That's I guess a bureaucrat could say that, but I guess if you're being massaged by the bureaucrat, maybe you think it's a harder rub than you guys think you're giving. I really think it's hard to have this public discussion and process discussion without the highest levels of DNR, who are our development arm of the state, and can talk about the consequences. Because I know even dealing with something as simple as farming, we deal with one of our state facilities that gets held up almost every year on something like spraying regulations by another state agency, DEC, and if you're in a couple-month growing season, you don't think it's a light process of bureaucracy when you miss your chance to do weed eradication or something. And that's one state agency to another. And I guess, and I'm not faulting the chair. I think the administration sends who they want to send, and I just would like to have someone of Mr. Meyer's stature. Somebody that we know and respect, and when he says something, I don't really blink in too much and believe it, because I know what his credibility level is, and he knows a lot about what light process of bureaucracy are, you know, trying to promote economic development. So that was more editorial, because they're not here and at a public venting, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Stoltz, and this is not the only hearing of Senate Bill 163. Have no worry. And we certainly could ask Commissioner Myers to attend. Any further questions, Senator Stoltz?
No.
Okay.
That wasn't even a question.
All right. Senator Machicki.
So this continues on with Senator Costello's questions. And if I'm understanding this correctly, there's a process today for nomination. If DEC were to process the nomination for designation, the bureaucratic process wouldn't change. It's just that instead of the department adjudicating a designation, the legislature would be the final say in adjudication. Is that correct?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, we have no process for adjudicating a decision on a nomination. We don't even actually have a process for the nomination. We just have received nominations.
Okay. Follow up.
Yes, Senator Machicki.
So I find it interesting that states that have become increasingly more environmentally active, like Washington, Oregon, and Idaho, do not have any designated, can I call them ONROs? Is that okay for a short acronym?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, typically they're called ONRWs, and that's correct. Washington, Oregon, and Idaho and Nevada have no ONRWs designated yet. And I think they have special statuses for different special statuses for waters. I think that one of the reasons that they don't have any is because of the magnitude of the consequences of the decision. I think a lot of people recognize that there are quite heavy consequences.
Follow up, Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So with that in mind, and then we look at another state that's generally less environmentally active, and they have 22 ONRWs. What types of water have they designated?
You're talking about, Senator Machicki, through the chair, you're talking about Arizona?
Yes, ma'am.
Senator Machicki, through the chair, I don't know the precise nature of the waters that have been designated there in Arizona. As I said, in Montana, which also is not necessarily considered, Montana, all national waters and national parks are designated ONRWs.
Yes, follow up, Senator Machicki.
So I'd be interested in, first of all, if Washington, Oregon, Idaho have a process and they just have not designated. And then I would also be interested in the bodies of water that Arizona has designated. And I have a follow-up question.
Yes, please.
Do you have any idea what the criteria would look like for the legislature to use in designating a Tier 3
water body?
Senator Michiki, through the chair, I'll just answer all three. Washington, Oregon, and Idaho do have processes for designated waters. They just haven't done that. We will follow up on those 22 water bodies in Arizona. In terms of criteria, as I've said, those criteria can be very broad, and it really does depend in, you know, what we've got in this bill is it really depends on, you could nominate and designate a hot spring if you wanted to as an outstanding national resource water, which could be a very important hot spring, and then it becomes very difficult to put precise criteria down. So we've left the criteria to the legislature.
Senator Michiki.
Just to clarify, so I had two things, the Arizona water bodies, but I am interested in reviewing the criteria in Washington, Oregon, and the process in Washington, Oregon, and Idaho as well, please.
Senator Michiki, through the chair, I apologize. We will get that process.
Thank you.
Senator Coghill was next.
Thank you. This got bigger than I thought it was going to get, but I really appreciate you taking time to answer questions, and I am looking forward to maybe commissioner-level conversation. But from your perspective, nominations being as they are, how does the EPA under this 131.12, how do they view it? Does that put an immediate restriction on anything?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, if a water is designated.
No, nominated.
A nomination does not put any restrictions on that water.
It's the designation. I wanted to hear that clear.
That was a comment that was also we also received on our draft regulations that we public noticed in 2014, and we planned on putting some clarifying language in the final regulations that we plan on public noticing in 2016, that the nomination does not affect the uses of the water, it's only the designation.
I wanted to hear that loud and clear because, you know, this is an arcane area of law that I went and read the CFR, and I'm thinking, yikes. From the sounds of it, you described this as a one-way door, pretty much, that once the designation happens, chances are it's not going to get undone unless there's a civil war in America. So that my words, Madam Chair. But I think we're getting pretty close to it, by the way, with regard to EPA. But it also, in Section 2 of 131.12, it talks about how the water quality shall be maintained unless the state finds, after full satisfaction of the intergovernmental coordination and public participation provisions of the state's continuing planning process. Holy mackerel. In other words, are we going to get overruled if we do a statute? Do we get overruled?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, I didn't fully explain all the three different tiers. I talked a lot about the Tier 3 waters, and that item 2 that you're talking about really describes Tier 2 waters. And so Tier 2 waters are waters that are of higher quality than the water quality criteria, so high-quality waters. In the state of Alaska, most of the waters in Alaska already are high-quality waters. And those waters, when we do a permitting action, for example, we have to make certain conclusions to satisfy anti-degradation. The uses are protected. They're using good treatment. So that's what that second segment refers to. In terms of being overruled, EPA is certainly following Alaska and watching the process that we're going through as we develop our anti-degradation implementation methods, as they are in many other states. They've worked very closely with us, and overall they're pleased with where we're going. If we just stopped working on the anti-degradation implementation methods, including Tier 3, then they would apply pressure. But we are really dedicated to taking these through to completion as well.
Hey, Madam Chair, the last point.
Yes, follow up.
So my confusion was that I took your CFR Part 131.12 in the statute, read it all, didn't make the connection between Sections 1, 2, and 3 is probably what happened. So I might even suggest that when we take a look at this law that we actually put that Section 3 on Line 7. Just kind of help us all stay on track, and next legislators, should they ever see this again, that it becomes very, very close to what we're talking about, and that is the Section 3, which is a Tier 3, right?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, that is my mistake, and I should have made that more clear when I was talking about that
with
you.
Thank you. See, you got my hair on fire for nothing.
You don't have much hair. All right. Senator Wilkowski.
Can you just briefly explain to me what would happen if a river was or waterway was designated, say, the Kenai River, just hypothetically?
Senator Wilkowski.
What would that mean for the users? Would that impact the ability of boats go up and down it, or what are the impacts of it?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, that's a very good question, and that has come up a lot. We've got a nomination, as you know, for the Chilkat River up in Haines, and so we have a lot of the same kind of questions coming at us right now. I'm going to try to go to Haines next Monday for a town hall meeting to try to address some of those questions. In general, that does not mean that boats can't go up and down the river. And it doesn't mean that you can't keep fishing in the river. You can, and when the river's frozen, you can snow machine on the river, for example. What it means very specifically is that you cannot increase pollutants from a point source discharge to the river. That's very specifically.
Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski?
Just maybe could you define what an increase in pollutants from a point source discharge means? I mean, what you like, how much, if you added boats to the river, then there'll probably be little drops of fuel that come out. Would that be increasing the discharge?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, I apologize for using my terms of art. So a point source discharge is a discharge from, for example, a wastewater treatment plant. And if a wastewater treatment plant, like a sewage treatment plant, has a pipe going into the river, that's a point source discharge. The type of pollution that you're referring to, the little drops of gasoline that come from the engine, that's a non-point source. That's considered a non-point source discharge. And we wouldn't be regulating non-point source discharges. Now, if, for example, there was a problem with water quality on that river and the state, including all the resource agencies, wanted to address that problem, we might do something like the two-stroke ban that went in place on the Kenai River, but that's not actually part of the Tier 3 process. That'd be part of our overarching water quality management.
Senator Costello.
Thank you. Kind of just trying to get my head around this, I think, like the rest of the members on the committee, but can you point to where I, as a state legislator, have the authority to vote on a measure that would create an outstanding national resource water? Isn't that the power of Congress?
Senator Costello, through the chair, it's a matter of semantics, actually. EPA calls them outstanding national resource waters. Some have suggested that rather than use that term, we use outstanding state resource waters. Some states do. Other states use outstanding resource waters. So it really is a matter of semantics. We're using the language in this bill from the implementing regs of the Clean Water Act, but we don't have to use that term.
Follow up?
And if one legislature cannot bind another, why is there such an importance put on the process to get water into this categorization Tier 3, and yet no discussion whatsoever for a future legislature to then rethink that and perhaps take one off? I mean, it seems to me like this is sort of the who's who of the water resources, and if something is favored or well-liked or in a particular state, that there could be a drive to set it aside. You know, we also have in our Constitution requirements to maximize our resources for the, you know, for Alaskans. And what if we were to put a designation like this on a resource and then tie our hands in that regard? I think we need some attorneys, actually, to respond. Can you respond to those questions?
Senator Costello, through the chair, as we discussed earlier, the CFR reference part 3 or paragraph 3, as Senator Coghill points out, describes the need for a process to designate. It doesn't. It's silent on a process for undesignating, and we're not aware of any outstanding national resource waters that have been undesignated. CFR does is it says states you shall make a process for designating, and is silent on undesignating.
Follow up, Senator Costello. Senator Coghill.
That last statement just got my ire up. I think we should have a process for undesignating put in this law, personally. But that's not what my question. But I think we should consider that as we move forward. I appreciate the fact that the DEC felt strongly enough to put together something that says the legislature needs to be doing this. I kind of get that. Two things. Any resident may. So that means any resident of Alaska, any citizen of the United States. How would you view that?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, it is our intent that it would be a resident of the state of Alaska.
Okay. Do we need to reference that? We have probably because of the PFD and many others. Any resident of the state. Then is it PFD qualified resident or 30-day resident for voting, that type of stuff?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, there is actually statute that describes resident. It describes person, and it describes resident, and then it describes person. So, that person can actually include an organization if it's an organization within the state, and we can get you those references.
Okay.
And make those clear in the bill if we need to.
Follow-up, Senator Coghill?
So the requirement is you shall, under this law, accept the nomination. That really follows suit with the CFR, I take it?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, yes, we have to have a process for nomination and a process for designation.
All right. I think, no disrespect to you, but I think having a process for undesignating is something we should at least test the EPA on. Just me personally.
Senator Coghill, through the chair, we will follow up on that.
Thank you, Senator Coghill, and that was what I was thinking about also. We designate a particular waterway, and then a community forms upstream, and they have no ability to put in a wastewater treatment plant. A mine might need to go in. Again, that would be prohibited if it's already designated and had no option to undesignate. Lots of questions about this. Further questions from committee members?
I have one.
Yes, Senator Michiki.
Hate to throw it out there so blatantly, but to me it looks like we're setting this up to significantly reduce the likelihood that an outstanding national resource water would ever be formed in the state of Alaska. It'd be far less likely with legislative approval than with agency approval. Would you say that that's a fair assumption?
Senator Michiki, through the chair, I've certainly heard that from some people. I don't know that that's a fair assumption or not.
Follow-up, Senator Michiki?
I know I would be very hesitant to move in that direction, and it seems like it's a more difficult body to move in that direction, so it... I would think, considering the record of the other states that have similar voting records like ours, that it would be a tough sell.
Senator Wilkowski.
If are we required by the EPA to set up some sort of procedure? If we don't do anything, either legislatively or through the executive branch, is there some sort of penalty that comes with that?
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, there's certainly no penalty that I'm aware of, although... there's no penalty that I'm aware of. I think the greater risk might be additional litigation. It's a requirement that we need to meet at some point.
Follow up?
Maybe when we get your attorneys involved, if they could brief us on what the ramifications are if we don't do anything, some sort of process in place.
Thank you. You've named three waterways, or three, well, one is a watershed, actually, that have been discussed, and I think all of us can identify development opportunities that exist on those waterways. And so this is of great concern. It almost feels like the EPA's Waters of the U.S. Implemented. So you've heard a lot of questions. I think we've given you a lot of homework to do. So at this time, we'll set Senate Bill 163 aside. We will ask Commissioner Myers to join us next time to hear DNR's perspective. But thank you, Ms. Hale, for taking all of our questions. Well done. Very well done. Thank you. So this concludes our meeting today. Our next hearing will be Wednesday, February 17th. Now, please note that that hearing will take place in the Senate Finance Committee room. It will be the topic of John Sturgeon's recent Supreme Court case, so that should be very interesting. So at this time, that will take place on Wednesday, by the way. And so at this time, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 4:56 p.m. Thank you.